Working Cows Podcast, Episode 1.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
This episode of the Working Cows Podcast is brought to you by Kamak Ranch Supply. Check out their website at kamakranchsupply.com. On this episode of the Working Cows Podcast, we're talking with Mary Jo Ehrman, the author of the book Farming Without the Bank and CEO of Fiscal Bridge, LLC. She started teaching and helping people break free from the debt and the banking system in 2010 when she learned about the infinite banking concept. She has helped many of her clients grow their farming operation, move to farming full-time, and quit their off-farm jobs, keep their assets out of the bank's control for collateral, make the bank plan B instead of plan A, and set up their farming operation with the next generation in mind. Mary Jo Ehrman, thank you for taking the time today to be with me, and I appreciate you jumping in on the ground floor of something we're trying to get started here with the Working Cows Podcast. I would like to hear a little bit about your story, your journey. What's your background? How'd you get started doing what you're doing now? Some of those things.
Okay. Well, thanks for having me. That's exciting. I'm excited for you and for your podcast. Obviously, it's something that's needed, right? So everybody's got to start somewhere. My experience is I grew up on a farm ranch operation in southwestern North Dakota. My dad was a purebred breeder, and they dispersed in the early 90s or the mid 90s, and now they just farm. So I come from a farm background, saw the need for people saying, hey, you know, we're going to the bank and the banks aren't borrowing us any money. I saw the interest expenses that are being paid every single year to the banks. And then you realize that every farm is bought from the bank with every generation. I learned about the concept that I teach, and I realized that, you know what, this can completely help our farmers and our ranchers, so why not share it? And then they didn't believe me, so I wrote a book. What a better way to teach them? Make them read.
Great, great. So I guess that leads into another question. Is this a standalone strategy for financing? Is it something that you can get to that point?
By standalone, meaning the only option?
No, just something that you can use as your sole source of financing.
You can, but it's going to take you some time to get there. I always tell people, you didn't start a ranch operation with 500 head of cattle. You're not gonna be farming without the bank overnight. So it's a process of getting there. You might not see it in your lifetime. It might be the second generation. It might be the third generation. It completely depends on where you are financially. You know, I have some people that can put a lot of money away to start it, and I have other people that don't have anything to start it. But it's getting started. That's the key. You know, you didn't go, oh, hey, I can't afford 500 head of cattle, so I'm not doing it. No, you probably started with 5 or 10, and you built yourself up. So don't expect to be operating without the bank overnight. And we don't necessarily want to get rid of the banks. We just want to make them plan B. Because what if we need them? We don't want to burn those bridges either.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate relationships that we see in a lot of ranches, is that you keep your wife close, but your banker may be closer.
That's awesome. That is exactly true. And the banker, you know, I have no quarrels with bankers. Bankers are great people. They're your neighbor. They're your family member. They're your friend. but they are nothing more than a puppet on a string to the shareholders of the bank. Those guys are the ones making the decision saying, hey, no, your customer can't have money. I have bankers call me a lot and say, I love your book. I love this concept because I am sick when I go to work and I can't, our, you know, longtime neighbor, family, friend, I can't lend them any money because the board won't let me. Or the board's decided not to do ag lending anymore because they, you know, corn's not $7 a bushel.
So maybe we should back up a bit and talk about what is the idea behind Farming Without the Bank? How is this funded? How does it work?
So Farming Without the Bank there's two parts to it. One, there's a concept of utilizing money. We want to make sure that you understand how to maximize and leverage your money. We have all been taught that we either borrow to buy something, we lease to buy something, or we use cash. And in all of those scenarios, we're losing opportunity. And so understanding the concept, which the concept that I'm teaching is the infinite banking concept, originally developed by R. Nelson Nash out of Birmingham, Alabama. And so he's my mentor. He's the one that's been teaching me the concept over the last 7 years. The concept is just that, a concept of utilizing money and thinking about it differently. One of the big parts of that is, hey, you saved up to buy that. Let's just say you saved up to buy some cows. You took money from savings and you bought the cows. Did you pay yourself back plus interest? In most cases, people are like, why would I do that? Why wouldn't you do it? You're willing to do it to give interest to the bank. You're willing to borrow money from the bank if you would have needed. Why not treat yourself like the banker? And the second part of that is leveraging money. If we need to leverage money, we need to use a tool that's going to allow us to leverage that money. And that tool just happens to be dividend-paying whole life insurance. That's structured in such a manner where it's cash value rich.
So the structure sounds like an important part of this, and that
absolutely
is what separates what you're doing from other opportunities that are out there.
Correct. It separates me from other insurance carriers or companies or what have you. There are very few mutual companies left, and of those mutual companies, they can't all structure a policy like I do. If you read the infinite banking concept, Nelson talks about a paid-up additions rider. There's a large number of companies that don't have that rider. Their rider doesn't function correctly. It doesn't have you can't maximize it like I can maximize it. So you really have to find certain companies that allow you to do that. Now, a lot of people will say, well, I'm going to go work with my local agent. Great. You can go work with your local agent, and then you'll come to me in like 10 years or 5 years and say, this guy didn't know what he was doing. How come my illustrations don't look like yours in the book? Because he doesn't know what he's doing, or he can't do it. Or maybe you have an agent that can do it, but they don't understand the infinite banking concept on the backside, so you don't get the strategies of, gosh, is it best to buy my cows with this policy, or do I go to the bank? Because sometimes it's important to use the bank, too, because we have lower interest rates at the bank, and maybe we want to leave our money in the policy for a different use. So there's lots and lots and lots of strategies.
In your book, Farming Without the Bank, you talk about the arrival syndrome. I think that's a good nugget that we can maybe mine for a second, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, it is. I can't even take credit for that because I completely stole it from Nelson. But the arrival syndrome is, the majority of our population has arrived. We don't want to learn anything more. We think we know it all, so we close our minds and say, yep, nope, can't do it. And I don't want to say that farmers and ranchers have the arrival syndrome, but I saw it when corn was $7 a bushel. And I said, hey, I've got this great concept. You can build this bank and you can be using your own money and leveraging your money. And they go, I don't need that. I'm like, what do you mean? You're like, why wouldn't you want to learn? And they just brushed me off, you know? And we've always done it this way, so why would we change?
What did most people do when corn was $7 a bushel? They bought a new combine, or they took out a loan and used the excess income to make a down payment on a loan for a new combine to avoid tax repercussions.
Right. Right. So we're buying a combine at $7 a bushel corn, but we can't pay for it at $4 a bushel. So now we're crying because we can't make the payment. And the banker told us they'd lend us the money, and the accountant told us we should buy it. But whose name is on the page, is on the check? The farmers or the ranchers. So who ultimately gets to make that decision if we're going to buy it or not? You do as a rancher because you signed the check. So unfortunately, and I'm going to beat up a little bit on bankers and ranchers here, but unfortunately, you can't let them run your operation. Or bankers and accountants, sorry. You can't let the accountant make that decision because he's, in most cases, when was the last time your accountant asked you for a five-year plan? I've not ever run into an accountant that has asked for a five-year plan. I've never ran into a banker that's asked for a five-year plan. They all look at a 12-month period of time. I'm going to lend you money today. You need to pay it back by the end of the year. We have taxes due in March. We need to prepare that. By December, we need to be buying something to offset the gains. Are they looking out another 4 or 5 years? You're amortizing a lot of those loans 7 years. Are we looking out 7 years to make sure that if prices fall, we can make those payments? No. So some of that comes back on the rancher and the farmer to say, hey, I need to start taking care of my own finances and doing my own books and doing these projections so that I know if I buy that, I'm going to be able to pay that going forward.
Yeah, very, very important considerations. Another really powerful point in your book was the point about how this system can help producers gain control. I think that's a very important part of what's lacking, kind of what you're talking about. Whose name is on that check? The bank, right?
Yeah, we've completely lost. Farmers and ranchers have lost control. And it's something, I don't farm and ranch. And I get mad. Because when you sell cows or when you take grain to the elevator, the bank's name is on your paycheck. I don't quite understand why people are okay with that and why they're not trying to find a way to say, forget it, I'm done. No more will your name be on my paycheck, and you have the ultimate decision if you're going to release money to me. I worked for that money. Farming is the only industry and the only business that the bank's name is on that paycheck. Any other business owner can go get a small business loan, and guess what? Everybody that buys from them, that goes right to them, and if they don't make a payment, they don't make a payment. And so why is it okay for farmers and ranchers? It's not, but we're just accepting it. So it needs to change. We need to do something different.
How is this method more efficient than traditional methods?
Well, the traditional method, the best traditional method is cash. So the difference is leveraging of the money. If you have $100,000 of cash and you go buy, well, you can't buy much with $100,000, a small piece of equipment maybe. So if you have $100,000 of cash in a savings account, you are going to take that $100,000 of cash and you are going to exchange it for a tractor. You are then going to have to pay back that $100,000 to savings to gain any interest that may have been lost. Within the life insurance policy, you borrow against the cash value. So if you have $100,000 of cash value, you just borrow against your cash value. They let your cash value in your account, earning you a guaranteed rate plus a dividend, while they borrow you their money, and you pay them back their money. Now, keeping in mind, this is where you become the bank is important. And in Nelson's book, he talks about owning the bank. You want to own the bank. It's a mutual life insurance company. You own part of that company. So when I look at my personal policies and I say, okay, the life insurance company is doing this, I'm literally borrowing it from my bank because I own part of that company. If I pay them interest, guess what? They make a profit. Who gets a share in the profit? I do. If you pay the bank interest, who gets a share of that profit? Shareholders of the bank, right? Dividends go to them, not you.
You talk about a guaranteed rate of return. do the specifics depend on the scale of the investment, or is how does that?
No, most companies, I've not seen a company in the history of myself doing this, I've not seen a company that has anything more than like a 4% guaranteed rate within their contract. And then your dividends are on top of that. And yep. Dividends will fluctuate based on interest rates and the economy and all
market
that kind of stuff. Yeah, in the 80s, you saw 13% dividend. Well,
yeah,
interest rates were 20 or 25%. You know, yeah. Bonds were making a lot of money, so they can justify a 12% interest rate. Right now, bonds aren't making 20%, 15%.
Yeah. I see. That's helpful. Kind of continuing on this idea of talking about the big picture, what is your vision of success implementing your system in the first generation?
Well, I think the first, it's just getting started, right? Because we're not even started. So just start. Success is just to start at this point. I mean, we don't have to create millions and millions of dollars if we can just start a policy, a life insurance policy with some cash value. Let's just use a family operation, okay? So mom and dad start a life insurance policy, and they then have death benefit. Mom and dad start a life insurance policy. They have cash value that they use to ranch with. They pass away, they have death benefit that they can leave to the second generation. They maybe didn't get out of the banking system. They maybe weren't farming without the bank by the time they passed, because they might be 60 years old by the time they even hear about my book. So now we're passing some death benefit to the second generation. The second generation has bought discounted dollars. In most cases, we're buying a dollar for 40 cents. That's being passed on, income tax free. So the power of death benefit is important as well. So now let's just say that you are the second generation. You inherit this death benefit. Is it going to make it easier for you to continue that operation and set the second generation up for success? Mom and dad are first.
Right.
They've left it to you. It's setting you up for more success, the second generation. But it's also teaching you that, oh, man, maybe I need to be using this life insurance system too, because dad did. He was teaching me how to do it. So now you have a life insurance policy. You pass that on to the third generation, which is your kids. Are we guaranteeing that that farm that we worked so hard to build is going to be there by the third generation? Absolutely. And we did it all. I have a blog on my Farming Without the Bank website. I have a blog called Generational Wealth. And it shows you exactly what happens when dad buys a policy. That money gets rolled into a new policy, third generation. By the end of the third generation, we're paying 18 cents for every dollar of death benefit. And we're doing that income tax free.
And that article will be linked in the show notes page at workingcows.net. You can check it out there and get some more information about that. We're going to take a quick break and thank our sponsors. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion with Mary Jo Erman, author of Farming Without the Bank.
This episode of the Working Cows podcast is brought to you by Kamak Ranch Supply. Check out their website at kamakranchsupply.com. They understand the needs of ranchers and farmers, whether you need to take care of your livestock, horses, or even building supplies. They have everything you need to work your cows, whether that be the chute you work them through, the water you bring them to, or the tools you use to make them go up that chute a little bit faster. So check out KamakRanchSupply.com for all of your ranching needs.
Back here with Mary Jo Erman, author of Farming Without the Bank. We've talked a lot about the kind of specifics of how it works and some of the benefits and what it has to offer. I would like to continue on now and ask you, who have been some of your influences? I'd like to hear about some of the people who have influenced you and brought you along in this journey to share this message.
Gosh, I have a lot of them. Besides, you know, accidentally coming upon Nelson and him being so kind as to share all of his knowledge. I mean, he's 86 years old. There's no way we'll get it all before he passes, but we're trying to absorb it as much as we can. But I have a lot of colleagues. I have a colleague that just lives like 3 hours away from me that's been in the industry for 30 years, and he's full of knowledge and just encouraging, and he was a farm kid as well. So he and I really work very close together to, you know, run strategies and is this going to work? Is that going to work? I've got a couple colleagues out of Canada that are amazing, that share a lot of information, and some in Utah. And we're a pretty little group of people sharing this concept, so we know everybody. And it's not, you know, the traditional industry is pretty cutthroat. There's a lot of bad apples out there working for commission. And so when you start to find people that are like-minded, you really just... It's almost mind-blowing to sit down with them and go, whoa. I mean, I had a meeting with one early this week, and he was showing me some strategies that he's doing. I'm like, whoa, that's unbelievable. Like, I didn't know you could do that. And so just everybody working together and sharing that experience, you know. There are some people that I have colleagues that know nothing about farming. Like, they don't know the difference between a cow and a bull. And so they're going to reach out to me for help. And they might have somebody that has questions about, I might have somebody that has questions about some sort of real estate. I don't work with a lot of real estate people. I don't have the great experience in there. So then we just call on each other for help. So lots of great people.
In the recommended reading section, you mentioned How Privatized Banking Works by L. Carlos Lara and Robert P. Murphy. I was wondering if that is, how is that related to what you're doing? So
Carlos and Bob, we call him Bob.
Yes. Yeah, I listen to Contra Krugman. So
Do you? Yeah. Oh, you're a big Austrian economist,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah.
So Nelson
no,
has...
No, I'm not. I'm trying to learn.
Oh, okay. Well, you are running in the right group. Nelson has been studied Austrian economy for, oh my gosh, I want to say probably close to 35, 40 years. And in the 80s... when 401ks, and it's interesting, you would love Nelson. In the 80s, when 401ks and IRAs were born, Nelson said, they're going to steal your money. They're setting this up to steal your money. And people thought he was crazy. And that, it was not long before that, I believe, that he started studying Austrian economy. Well, he hooked up with Bob. Carlos actually read his book. And he took it to Bob and said, you got to see this. You got to see what this guy's talking about. And they said, oh my gosh, this is one of the steps to get our country out of the, and stop inflation of the dollar.
Mm.
So Austrian economy basically is teaching us that what we're doing, the economists that we're listening to right now are just inflating our dollar. We're printing money and we're printing money and we're printing money, and it's not backed by anything. The gold standard has been long lost. And so what is the inflation of our dollar? Well, it's the easiest way for the government to steal money from us, essentially. So they've really teamed up. Carlos and Robert have really teamed up, and they've teamed up with Nelson and created the Nelson-Nash Institute.
Hmm.
And so we all of us that teach the IBC concept are certified within that institute to teach it, so we understand the Austrian side of it as well. And Carlos and Robert are saying, hey, we need to stop fractional reserve banking. And in order to do that, if we borrow against the life insurance policy, life insurance companies are not banks. They can't turn money 10 times like a bank can. So if you borrow a dollar, they're only going to lend a dollar. Or if you put a dollar in, they can only lend a dollar. Where the banks, if you put a dollar in the bank, they go to the feds, grab $10, lend out $9, where did that $9 come from? Thin air. That's what's causing inflation. So in that book, they're just saying, if we use the infinite banking concept and we utilize whole life insurance, we can stop. If 10% of the population did a certain number of these steps, we could probably stop the Federal Reserve.
And at the Working Cows podcast at workingcows.net/1, you will be able to find links to some information on fractional reserve banking and some of those things that we've just touched on today, so that you can dive a little bit deeper into that if you are interested. We are kind of coming close to about the amount of time that I wanted to take today, and I appreciate you being willing to come in and sit down with us. I just have a couple of questions that I wanted to kind of close out with and give you an opportunity to share a little bit about what's going on in your life. And I guess, what are some best practices for success in using this strategy?
You know, in Nelson's book, he has a whole chapter called Use It or Lose It. And the biggest thing for success is never to stop learning about what I'm teaching. Don't just read my book and then go, oh, this was really good. We're going to start this policy and we're going to work with Mary Jo and we're going to, you know, we've got this policy and then we're never going to talk to her again and we're not going to implement it right and we're not going to run strategies by her or we're going to borrow against the policy and never pay it back. Education, I call it continuing ed for my farmers and ranchers. So we do, you know, I do farm conferences, and that is part of the continuing ed. I bring in speakers. I bring in professionals in certain industries that can help, and I expect that you want to be successful. So you're going to want to attend those things. You're going to want to attend any webinars I have or anything like that.
Sure. Yeah, that's a very important thing, I think, that, you know, one word that keeps running through my head, and I'm too ADD to remember to say it, is a paradigm shift is what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
We are talking about a paradigm shift, and that really is what the Working Cows podcast is all about, is shifting the paradigms that we have been operating under for many years, whether it's rotational grazing or it is economic analysis of your different enterprises in your ranch operation, or maybe it's even how you finance, go about financing, and who are you making rich with with your capital that you're using to operate.
And break through the arrival syndrome.
Right? Talk about that.
So if we can make that, we can't make the paradigm shift if we've arrived. If we think we know it all and there's nothing to be learned and we have the arrival syndrome, we're not going to get any further. I mean, I don't know what page it is on my book, but it's very close to the beginning, maybe page 5 or something. If you've arrived and you think you know it all, give the book to somebody else. Because it's people will say, oh my gosh, it's life insurance. I'm done. I'm done. I don't want to hear anymore. It doesn't matter if it's rotational grazing. I have a lot of clients that say, gosh, that rotational grazing is awesome. It's the best thing we've ever done. And then I have some clients that go, I just don't see how it can work. And I'm not here to tell you how to graze your cattle. I don't have any, you know. But I am that person that says, well, why don't you look into it? If you don't like it and you've looked into it, absolutely, kudos to you. It's not something that you agree with. We all have that option to say, yep, I don't agree with that. But if you haven't looked into it and you haven't educated yourself, how can you judge it without knowing? You can't, but you've arrived.
Do your own homework, right?
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Unfortunately, too often in pretty much the human condition is too often we refuse to change until the pain of staying the same is greater than the pain of changing.
Yep. And that's funny that you say that, because how did the concept come to be? Nelson had $500,000 land loan that went to 24% interest overnight on him. He had no idea how he was going to pay for it. His partner filed bankruptcy. He inherited another $300,000. So he had $800,000 at 24% interest. He says in his book, after many nights of praying, how am I going to get out of this? It came to him that he realized, I have money in life insurance. And I can use that to pay off the banks. And then I can pay myself back later. Then, how do I get more money in there as fast as I possibly can to turn around and pay off the snakes and dragons, as he calls them, and pay myself back later? Out of adversity will always come the solution. That's exactly what you said. Out of pain came the concept that I teach. why would you need it any other way, right? So the pain is great enough in the farming industry that a lot of farmers are saying, hey, we want change. I mean, I've sold 5,000 books in 2 years or 2.5 years, not because people don't care. It's because the pain is enough that they're saying, I am done. I want control. I want to be able to say, I'm going to take a loan. This is when I'm going to pay it back. This is how fast I'm going to pay it back. I want control of my finances. I don't want that control and my livelihood in the control of the banks. Because farmers put their livelihood up as collateral.
Mary Jo, thank you for your passion. I can see it on your face as we sit here and talk today to help people gain control, to help people operate more efficiently, to help people make use of their money and not make someone else rich by making use of the capital that they need to operate. And I thank you for taking the time to sit down with us here today. It was I had a lot of fun, and I think we have whetted some appetites, and hopefully if you're in the neighborhood again sometime, we can make it happen again. It
awesome.
was very helpful. So is there anything you want to share with my audience, where they can get in touch with you, where they can get your book, where they can see you live in person?
Yep, you can go. Everything that you need to know about me is on farmingwithoutthebank.com. You have all my contact information. You can grab my book there or books. I also have Wealth Without the Bank in Wall Street, and that is, you can grab that one there. You can grab Nelson's books on my website. How Privatized Banking Works, I believe, is on there. So there's a lot of information about this concept, so you can grab it all there, contact me there. After you've read the book, if you want to take that next step and work with me one-on-one, just give us a call and we'll schedule that appointment. But you do have to read the book first.
Yeah.
I'm pretty hardcore.
Yeah, I think I heard you say on another appearance that you won't even get past my secretary if you haven't read the book.
Nope, you won't.
So, yeah.
She's trained well.
All right. Sounds good. Farmingwithoutthebank.com. Get the book there and see where you can catch up with Mary Jo next. Thank you.
Yep.
So,
yeah.
Thanks
for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, that's going to do it for our show today on the Working Cows podcast. Go ahead and visit workingcows.net/1 for more information on everything that we discussed here today with Mary Jo Ehrman. As we always say here at workingcows.net, our goal is not to tell you what to think, but just to give you something to think about. And I hope that this has given you something to think about today and into the future about how you could maybe get creative in the way that you go about financing your operation, and just some different things to dive into. If you want to check out workingcows.net/1, there will be links to Mary Jo Ehrman's book, Farming Without the Bank, Wealth Without the Bank or Wall Street, as well as links to some different articles by Bob Murphy and Carlos Lara and others on this infinite banking concept. So check out workingcows.net. Also, go check out episode 2 that is already uploaded and ready for you to listen to. It should be in the feed that you found this episode in, episode 2, workingcows.net/2. That is an interview with Dallas Mount about the four pillars of a successful ranching operation. So check that out, and we will see you next week.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.